It was just
that might be the best joke so far. that was pretty good.
The whole bath of Gemara every week, and the only thing that keeps you awake is the jokes. Anyway, here's
that's
what
that's when you go like.
Right, exactly. We have some very interesting Gemaras tonight. We have towards the end, we have a nice Legatitas. These are famous Gemaras. And but until then, we have some very interesting Gemaras. Let's jump into it. It's Chav Zayin and Mabez. We're in the third line. And the Mishnah picks up. Ein mochrin eshel rabbin l'yachid. You're not allowed to sell a shul that once belonged to a rabbin. You're not allowed to sell it to a yachid, to an individual. A yachid, and yachid in this case is anybody less than 10. And a rabbin would be 10 or more. So if you had a shul that belonged to the rabbin and that the rabbin davened in, so there was a minyan there, and then you sell it to a yachid who's just going to use it for his basement shul, but he's not going to have a minyan there. So then you're not allowed to do that. Why? Because you would be reducing its kedusha. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Now the Rishonim discuss whether moridin oso mikdusha so means that you are eliminating its kedusha, meaning there is no kedusha whatsoever once you have gone from 10 or more to 9 or less. There's no kedusha in this shul anymore. It doesn't matter what's there's no kedusha. It doesn't have a kedusha of a base kinesis. Some people say no. It's just a reduction in the kavod. There is in the kedusha. There is kedusha, but it's not the same. Anyway, we'll see from the Gemara how the Gemara seems to lean. But Amru Lo, the Rabbanan say to Rabbi Meir, why not? Why can't you sell it? Im Kain, if you're going to be concerned about a reduction in Kedusha, Af Lo Me'ir Gedol L'Ir Katana, I would tell you, you shouldn't sell a shul that belonged to a larger city to a smaller city, because you are reducing its Kedusha.
Well, wait a minute. I mean, 10... The minion is 10. But Tzibur is 10.
Tzibur is 10.
Okay. So what does it matter if you have 11 or 100?
Very good. Very good. This is going to be the argument of the Gemara. Sweet. Gemara is going to go back and forth on this, and the Gemara is going to come to a conclusion. You're absolutely right. At first glance, it appears that you are correct. What my nafkamina between 11 and 1100? 11,000.
So what does it mean the shul is where the shul is.
The shul is where the shul is. It's just a matter of who possesses it. Does it belong to the Ir Gedola, or does it belong to the Ir Katana, or the rights, the deed? The deed of the shul, yeah. We're not talking about, they have the porta homes. Mm-hmm. What do they call those? Exactly. So we're not talking about those types of homes. You just kind of lift them up over in a trailer and then you bring them. No, the shul is where the shul is, but it belongs, the deed. Who does the deed belong to? The Ir Gedola, it says the Rabbanon, you can't sell the deed from an Ir Gedola to an Ir Katana because you'd be reducing its Kedusha. So what's the difference, Rabbi Meir? The Gemara is going to discuss back and forth. It's an interesting Gemara. Next five lines, it discusses the Tam behind it. Anyway, it says the Gemara, Shapir Ka'amar Yilei Rabbanon Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir made a really good argument. If you're going to tell me it's a problem to sell it from a rabbin to a yachid, it should be equally a problem to sell it from a rabbin to a smaller rabbin. So it says the Gemara of Rabbi Meir. How does Rabbi Meir respond? Rabbi Meir says, Me'ir gedola le'ir katana, me'ikara kadisha hashtanami kadisha. That's what you said. If you're going from a larger city to a smaller city, it had kadusha before, it has kadusha now. What's the problem? What's the difference? There's still a kadusha, it's still rabbin. But me rabim lo yachid leka kedusha. When you go from a rabim to a yachid, there is no kedusha. It sounds pashtus in the Gemara. It sounds like their mamish. You've eliminated the kedusha. It's not that there's a reduction in the kedusha. Leka kedusha. There's no kedusha. At least at first glance, it seems like the Gemara is saying there is no kedusha at all. You have completely eliminated the kedusha.
Like
that's why Rav Meir has the problem.
Like purge the kedusha out of
it. Yeah, purge the kedusha out of it. Right. You've sucked it out of it. It's like the Ghostbusters, right? It's exactly like Ghostbusters, actually. So says the Gemara.
I really forgot the movie.
Yeah.
I saw it like maybe 4 years
ago. I know, so did I, but you can't forget the Marshmallow Man.
You should have been Cosway McGillah more often.
If you can't forget the Marshmallow Man, this is the highlight.
Stay Puft.
What?
Stay Puft.
Stay Puff?
The Stay Puff Marshmallow Man. That was his whole thing.
Oh, I don't remember that. I just remember that they shot the Marshmallow Man and went all over the place. That's all I remember as a kid. Yeah, these movies, you have to rewatch these movies. Anyway, that's what the plane rides are called. That's a plane ride. Or not.
Maybe you could catch with this Gamora and then have a small talk about Ghostbusters.
Maybe you should. Anyway, what do the Rabbanon say? How do the Rabbanon respond to Rabbi Meir? Rabbanon say, Iikalamechash, if you're going to be concerned about going from a rabbin to a yachid, so ki haigav the nami Iikalamechash. You should be equally concerned about going from a large rabbin to a smaller rabbin. Why? Mishum Barov Am Hadras Melech. Because you have an inyan of Barov Am. So when you had a larger rabbim, so you had Rovam. Now you want to sell it to a smaller rabbim? That's not Rovam anymore. So the Rabbanon take issue with Rabbi Meir's reasoning, because they're saying Rovam is still an inyan of Kedusha. Now, what would Rabbi Meir say to that? Taka. It's not a bad argument. Rovam Hadras Melech. He denies Rovam Hadras Melech. Nobody denies it. It's a din. Right? It's a pasuk. It's a din.
That's a nice like idea.
Okay.
In terms of halacha, there's a halacha difference between 9 and 10. Okay.
Yes.
And there's really not. It's preferable. Rovam Darvzak is like if you come down a bigger minion, fine. But you still have to feel up and see what even with 10 or 11.
Okay.
You know.
I understand what you're saying. I would say it a little bit sharper. I don't always say it sharper. I typically do not say sharp, but I will say sharper tonight because I don't completely agree with you that it's a halacha. Anyway, I better not because I have to record this thing. sorry, Stein. Sorry. Okay, he's the only one listening to this. I know it. Nobody else cares.
One is enough.
Exactly. As long as it's one. Barov Am is an issue not of Kedusha. Or I should say, the machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Ronan is Barov Am Hadras Melech an inyan of Kedusha? Or is it simply an inyan of Kavod?
You're
that?
Me too.
3205? Yeah, it's the same guys.
Unbelievable.
Oh, you know who it is? It's got to be Stein. It's probably not Tel Aviv. Anyway, I don't know. So what are the chances? Anyway, where am I?
I was wondering where we were.
No, don't answer.
I don't think Stein has my number.
Don't answer. He doesn't have the answer. Anyway, I think that the machlekes is, if I can say so, I think that is Barov Am Hadras Melech an inyan of Kedusha, where the Rabbanon say it's an inyan of Kedusha. So if you're going from a rabbim to a lesser rabbim, so you are moridin also mikdusha so. But Rabbi Meir says Barov Am Hadras Melech. What does Hadras Melech mean? It's the hadar of the king. It's the kavod of the king. There's a kavod issue, but kavod is not but the inyan of malin bakodesh velo moridin is not dependent on kavod. It's not the same thing. I was looking before. I don't remember if we learned this, and since I hadn't given shir on it, I didn't chazer the other daffin so well. What is the makor for malin bakodesh velo moridin? Do we have a makor for it? I don't remember.
Didn't we have it in the Gemara?
I don't think we had it in the Gemara either.
Isn't that Mishnah that we just read about?
Yes.
You can't sell the.
But what's the makor for that? Why? I'm saying why.
What's the source of that Mishnah?
Yeah. What's the source of the Mishnah? Is there a pasuk in the Torah that the Chazal point to? Are the Chazal making it up out of their top of their heads? I don't think you could do this. What is the issue of Barovam of Malam Kolish Lo Moridin? And if you understand the makor for that, you can better understand whether Hadras Melech and Barov Am can fit into that, or whether Barov Am is a different halachic consideration. I think it is a halachic consideration, but it's a different one. That's what Reb Meir would argue. I agree, Barov Am, but don't bring Barov Am into a Mishnah and a topic where we're discussing Malin Bakodesh Velo Moridin. Kedusha and Kavod are different things. I think that's the machlokes. I haven't seen that anywhere, but that's my understanding. Sharp, thank you. Sharp.
But you know this whole idea about like you know that a bacon has to lose kedusha when you go down lose your minion.
Yes.
What does that mean about like these shuls where they stop having a minion on a regular basis where all the Jews leave the neighborhood and there's just a few elderly Jews left and they don't have a minion on Shabbos or a minion on Shabbos? Like, what's the status of these shuls? Like,
it's a very good question. That's a very good question.
I never had a discussion of it, but I'm just talking.
You know, I don't know either if when we say a basic nesses shel rabim, is that a basic nesses that belongs to the rabim, meaning that it's a kehila type of like base tefila people? And, you know, many different people contributed towards Beis Tefillah's mortgage, v'chulei, v'chulei. Or is it just that it belongs to a yachid, but you have a minyan davening there, right? In which case, I would say, you know, as long as you have a minyan davening there on occasion, that would be, I don't know. It's a good question. It's a very good question. You know, where do you draw the line?
There are chassidic shtibles where, like, the Rebbe owns the shul.
Right. Very much so. I used to daven in a shtiebel where, you know, where there was, it was owned by one guy. One guy owned the shtiebel, and people daven there. Yeah. You can't say it didn't have a kedusha. I mean, people daven there every Shabbos. Maybe even during the week they had minyanim. I don't know. I don't remember. You know?
It could be that once it's considered Beit Knesset of the rabbim, it can't lose that status. I don't know. Maybe.
Right. Right. Well, right. You, at least you're not allowed to actively.
Even if they lose dominion, I mean.
Yeah. I don't know either. It's a good question. Anyway, we go on. The Mishnah says, next Mishnah says, Ein mochin beis haknesses, ella al tanai, she'im yirtzu yachziruhu divir Rabbi Meir. This is Mishnah is going to discuss a three-way machlokes between Rabbi Meir, Chacham, and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether you can sell a beis haknesses carte blanche, or there have to be conditions involved. Rabbi Meir says, you're not allowed to sell a shul unless you stipulate that it can be that you can do a trade backseas. Right? You could do a you could be an Indian giver, so to speak. You
can, raise a statement.
What? I don't care. Nobody's listening to this. I don't care.
I'm not Indian, so you didn't offend me.
Okay, fine. So, I think calling a spade is also very, by the way, it's also...
Well, it depends on who you call that spade.
I guess so. But a spade was a spick, you know.
I understood that. Yes, thank you. Is this thing on?
It's still on. And I don't care. No Hispanic is listening to this. I can guarantee that. If they are, they'll know where to find me. What?
One Epstein.
Anyway, how did I get
off
this?
Just carried away really quickly.
The point is, you have to stipulate when you're selling the shul according to Rabbi Meir that if they want, they can always renege on the deal and reverse it. You can reverse the deal. You can reverse the deal a year later, 5 years later, 20 years later.
I thought that spade was actually the most appropriate way to go there.
The Chachamim Omrim. The Chachamim say, Mochin oso memkar olam. The Chachamim are a little bit more lenient, and they say you can sell it indefinitely, meaning forever, except chutz me'abedvarim, except four things. You cannot sell it for four things, that it could be turned into four things. Lamerchatz, a wash house. Laburski, a tannery. Letvila is a mikvah. Beis Hamayim is, some people say, for washing clothes. Some people say Beis Hamayim is for urinating. It's a bathroom.
It seems like these things are incongruous.
How so?
A mikvah compared to everything else.
Yes, but a mikvah, true. Because a mikvah is used for at least some kedusha purposes. But still, a mikvah, you have people who are unclothed who are bathing in it, so it's still a...
Is a piece of parchment for a coffin? Does that also go through a tanner?
A tanner?
It's processed, but it's not processed in the same way like the leather for a couch is, but still.
Right.
So, but, yeah. I'm just wondering if my idea is that it's actually like completely wrong.
No, I think it's just because you're using it for, you know, like the tanner is a problem of smell. Mm-hmm. Right, so the smell can still exist by a cloth or leather couch. In all these cases, you know, you're kind of using it inappropriately, so to speak. I mean, obviously a mikveh is a mikveh, but you're going in there unclothed. So according to the Chacham, the tefillah. Tefillah is a mikveh. And the Beis Hamayim is either for a urinal, for a toilet, or for a, what do you call it, for a bathroom, or for a, for laundry. At any rate, according to the Chachamim, they're a little bit more lenient than Rabbi Meir. They say you can sell it for indefinitely, as long as you don't sell it for these four things. Rabbi Huda comes along, and he says, Mochrin osol l'shem chatzir, you can sell it as a chatzer, meaning you just stipulate it's going to be used as a courtyard, the halokeach mashiyotze yase, and the lokeach can do anything he wants with that from that point. So as long as you stipulate in the contract that it's going to be used as a chatzer, the lokeach can go around, turn it around into a tannery or into a even a bathroom if he wants to. So the Rabbi Yehuda Lechora is the most makel, because he says you can sell it indefinitely and for anything. But he does stipulate that his chumra is you do need to stipulate in the contract that it has to be for a chutzer. Because otherwise...
That's being sold as a chutzer?
It's being sold as a chutzer.
But the person can...
Yeah. Beyond that, he can do whatever he wants with it. But it's got to stipulate in the contract it's being sold for a chutzer. What the lokeach decides to do with it afterwards is not Rabbi Yehuda's concern. Says the Gemara Ul Rabbi Meir, back to Rabbi Meir Shita, who says that that you can do a trade backsies, that you can go, you can renege on the deal, even 50 years later. Hechi Dairiban, how can anybody live in that and use that shul anymore? Ha Havila Ribis, that would be Ribis. Why is it Ribis? Because what's happening? I'm going to sell it to you, and you're going to use it. And then we're going to do a trade back. I'm going to give you back the money 20 years later, and you give me back the shul. But what happened in those 20 years? You used it without paying for the usage, because I'm just giving you back the money. The same money you gave me 20 years ago, I'm giving you back.
Who says it doesn't work like Yovel?
What?
Who says it doesn't work like Yovel, where you take the years off?
You don't. It doesn't work. It's a straight trade. What?
I don't see the ribbis. Where's the ribbis?
The ribbis is in the usage. It's not in the actual tangible financial. It's in the usage. Because that usage is worth 6,000 shekels a year. A month, sorry. Or whatever it is.
But you give back the same amount of money, not the value of the...
Right, not the value of the money at the time. I don't know the exact halachas of whether you give it the money at the time. I think
the value of the property was, you know, when you release it.
I don't think so. A straight Gemara is that if you bought it for $100,000, you give back $100,000. Okay, these are all good questions. You know, if you're giving it back 50 years later, what is $100,000? It's really worth $400,000. But okay, at any rate, the Gemara says you have a ribbis in usage because they've used it and haven't paid for the usage. So says the Gemara, Am Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Meir b'shitas Rabbi Yehuda Amra. Rabbi Meir is actually working within the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda elsewhere. Da Amar, who says in Baba Metzia, Tzad Echad Beribis Mutter. You can have a Tzad Echad Beribis. What does it mean, Tzad Echad Beribis? Tzad Echad Beribis means, if I give you a loan of $1,000 and I want you to pay back $1,060 in a month, or in a year, whatever it is, $1,050. So that's ribbis. That's straight ribbis. When you pay it back, you've got to pay back that ribbis. There's no way around it. That's ribbis gumor. However, there's tzad echad beribbis, which is what? If you decide to go to a trade back, if you want to renege on the deal 50 years later, so then there would be ribbis. But if we never renege on the deal, then there's no ribbis. Because it was a straight trade. It was a straight deal. It was a mechira gemura. You bought it 50 years ago, and I took your money, and you still have it. I'm not going to do a trade back. The whole point of the Mishnah is, if they want, they can do a trade back. And they can give back the money and take back the shul. But there's a possibility, at least a 50% possibility, that they won't. So if you don't, there's no ribbis at all. If I give you a loan and say there's a 6% interest, there's interest. But if there is no interest because I'm not doing a trade back, so then there's no ribbis. That's only tzad echad, meaning there's only a one side possibility that there will be interest. If we trade it back, then mimela, interest has kicked in. But if you don't do a trade back, then no ribbis. And Reb Meir says, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's fine. And that's what I'm saying. I'm saying it's fine. It's fine to do it because we don't know bivados if there's going to be ribbis. Okay. That's what he says. Haresh, Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Amar tzalecha b'ribbis mutter. Dasanya, we have a brisa that shows this. Haresh ha'yinosha b'chavera mana v'asul sadeo mecher. If a guy owed his friend a mana, $1,000, and he made his field into a mecher. Now, in this case, it doesn't really mean mecher. Why it uses the lashon of mecher, I don't know. But it really is like a mashkon. He says, I'll give you my field, And if I pay it back, if I pay you back, then you give me back the field. And if I don't pay you back, then you keep the field. Bizman shamocher ochel peros. As long as the seller, meaning the person who originally borrowed the money and is now giving away his field as a mashkin, if he continues to eat the peros from the field like he was before, mutter, then it's totally mutter. But lokeach ochel peros, but if the buyer, really in this case it's the lender who is now getting as a mashkin in the field, if he is now eating from the fruits of the field, usser. That would be usser. Why? It would be usser because ribis. Because he is collecting, he is eating from the fruits of the field. He's not paying for it. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, afilu lokeach ochel peros mutter. Even if the lokeach is eating the peros, it would still be mutter. Why? It would still be mutter because tzad echad beribis is mutter. Va'am Rabbi Yehuda, maisav abitus ben zonan, sha'as sadil mechra apir v'lezer ben azariah. There was such a story. Abitus ben Zonan, who also made his field into a mecher, and he sold it to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, v'lokeach ochel peros haya. And that was a case where the guy who was taking the field, he was in fact eating the peros. So that's a proof, says Rabbi Yehuda, that tzad echad beribis is mutter. So Amrullah, they said to him, Yisham Raya, you're going to bring me a proof from there. Mocher ochel peros haya, v'lokeach. You have the case wrong. Don't bring me a raya, don't bring me a tam, that the reason for your din is because you saw this done elsewhere, because what you saw done elsewhere was incorrect. That was not actually what happened. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was not the one eating the peros. The lokeach was eating the peros, the mocher was eating the peros. It wasn't the Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Therefore, you cannot bring me a raya that tzad echad beribis is mutter. May binayu. What is the difference between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda in this case? Tzad echad beribis ikabanayu. Mar savet tzad echad beribis mutter. Mar savet tzad echad beribis aser. That's the machlokes. Rava Amar no. Rava says no. Dekuli yama tzad echad beribis aser. Everybody holds tzad echad beribis is going to be usr. So then what's the machlokes? V'hacha beribis amanas lahaksi erkebenayu. What happens if in this case of the field is you're actually going to not only are you going to eat the peros from the field, but what are you going to do? You are going to give it back. When you trade back the field, when you give back the field, the guy gives back the loan, you give back the field, you also include in there the cost or the value of the fruits that you ate. So you're constantly doing a cheshbon, you keep a ledger of all the fruits that you've eaten over time, and you decide to pay it back when you give the field back. Is that going to be mutter? Mar sava ribis amanas lahachzir mutter. So Rabbi Yehuda says, that's totally mutter. As long as you give back the value of the fruits, it's fine. But mar sava aser. And the other guy says, Rabbanan say, no, it's aser to do it still. Why? Because at the time that you did it, you were actually taking ribis. It's just after the fact that becomes not ribis. But since at the time that you were doing it's ribis, it's a problem. Okay, the next Gemara says, V'chachamim omrim mocher nosor memkar olam. The Gemara says, we're at the two dots, the last skinny line. The Chachamim say you can sell it as an indefinite sale, as a finite sale, and as long as you don't use it for four things. A person is allowed to urinate within four amos of a makum tefila. So he can, if he's out in the field and he davens, he is allowed to, he can urinate within four amos of where he davened. There is no kedusha to that makum tefila where he davened. Amar Rav Yosef, my kamashmalan. That's not a chiddush, says Rav Yosef. Tanina, we learned that in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, mocher nosor l'shem chatzer. Rabbi Yehuda said you can sell it as a chatzer, v'lokeach mashvir tzayase, and then you can do whatever you want with it. V'afilu rabbanon, and even the rabbanon who are more machmir say lo ka'amri el abesa knesses tekevia kedusha say. They only say that you can't use it as a besa mayim. Why? That's a shul, because a shul has an inherent kedusha, a lasting kedusha, aval dalaramis. But a regular dalaramis in the field, the lo kavia kedusha sayulo. There's no kedusha that's kavua there. It's just the field. Then there's no problem. So obviously it's going to be fine. Okay, the Gemara doesn't resolve what the chiddush is in this case, but in a chanami, the Gemara seems to say that you can urinate within four v'hamashtin. If somebody urinates, marchik dalaramis u'mispalel, then he should distance himself 4 amos from where he urinated, and then he should daven. Now the Gemara says, Amar le bishlema, I understand how mashta marchik dalat amos misbalel. I understand the part of the halacha that says that if you urinated in place A, you should marchik yourself dalat amos to place B and then daven. Because Tanina, we learned a similar halacha that says, Kama yarchik mehen uminatsoa, how much should a person distance himself from urine and from dung? Dalat amos. So we have that principle that if a person is within dalat amos of urine, you need to distance yourself from outside the dalat amos. But ela hamispala marchik dalat amos umashtin. But the principle that we say a person who davens has to then distance himself 4 amos, walk 4 amos away, and then urinate, lamali. Why do you have to do that? You're telling me there's a kedusha? There's a kedusha to the place where you davened? Ihachi, if that's the case, kedushtinu lakulu shvili de Narda. You have now been mekadesh all the streets of Narda, because there are constantly people who are getting off their horse and buggies in the middle of the street and davening. So now all of a sudden you're creating a kedusha to every single dalat amos in Narda. It can't be that's the case. So why, if you daven, do you now have to distance yourself 4 amos? What is that? Why is that? So the Gemara says, Tani yishe. Don't learn it as marchik. You don't have to distance yourself, but rather you should wait. You should wait the amount of time that it takes to walk dalat amos, which is a few seconds. Now the Gemara says, Bishlam mamash din yishe. I understand if you urinated, then you should wait. Kdei hiloch dalat amos mishum nitzotzos. If a person should wait, a few seconds, the amount that it takes to walk dalat amos, because of nitzotzos, because of some spark. There's something left in the urine. So you want to wait. You should wait a little bit after urinating to daven. But ela mispalel. But if you're telling me somebody who's already davened, yishe kedehiloch dalat amos, he should wait the amount of time that it takes to walk dalat amos and then urinate lamali. Why do you have to do that? You've already finished your davening. So what's left? What's left of the davening that all of a sudden you have to wait? So Amar Rav Ashi, shekol dalat amos tefilosos sedura b'fiv. Every dalat amos, meaning the amount of time that it takes to walk dalat amos, those few seconds, a person still has the tefillah on his lips, v'rechushi marchash and sifivase, and his lips are still moving from the davening that he just did. Therefore, if you davened and need to urinate right away, you should at least give it a few seconds for your lips to stop moving. What does this mean, that your lips are moving? Is a very strange principle, because our lips are not, it's not like I'm saying, Hashem's v'asai tiftach. You know, it's not like a Pippi Longstocking. If you ever seen those movies where like it's dubbed, and so you have a person talking, and they're talking in their whatever language they're talking in, and then we're trying, and then they're dubbing.
I've seen dubbed movies, but I've seen Kung Fu.
So the Kung Fu's also. So
it's the same thing. Yeah.
Same thing with the Kung Fu's. You have to be like, and there's no talking afterwards because the English has just stopped. It's not even close. What are you trying to do here?
You get what you pay for.
I guess so. We never paid for Pippi Longstocking. So anyway, what's my point?
You put in the money for the big bucks for
a
very,
this is a very strange principle that your lips are still moving. What's going on over here? All right. So I don't have a concrete answer to this, but I thought like this: when a person finishes davening, so he takes a breath. He actually takes a breath in, and then he closes his lips. If you ever like paid attention, I started paying attention. When you're done, you close your lips, and then when you're on to the next subject, you take a breath in order to say what you need to say. So you're actually closing your lips, and you're making the next gesture that you're making takes a breath in, which requires you to open your lips again. So your lips are actually moving. Are they moving in the context of tefillah? The chiddush of the Gemara is yes, they are. In other words, let's say, for example, I'm saying this hashkafic. Maybe this is ridiculous. Okay, when you say shalom aleichem to somebody and you extend their hand, there's a mitzvah in saying shalom aleichem to somebody. You're doing something nice. And on a micro level is a shtickle mitzvah too. If you're going to say that the actual handshake is a mitzvah, then every movement towards that handshake has to be at least a chelik of that mitzvah. That is to say, every single action to the micro action, sub-actions within that action is part of that greater action. And so the chiddush of the Gemara, I would suggest perhaps, is that even though, of course, you're not davening after you finish davening, your lips are not moving within davening, but the halachic, the way the Torah views the closing of the lips and then the reopening of the lips to garner breath enough to move on to the next subject is all considered part of the davening context, even though it's, of course, not davening. But since every action, every single little activity that we do has to be placed in the box of mitzvah or non-mitzvah, so the very closing of your lips post-davening and perhaps opening it to start the next activity has to be placed in one of those boxes. And so the Gemara is being mechadesh that even the movement of your lips after davening is still in the context of davening. That is still considered davening. I don't know. It's the best I've got. Sorry. Zalfen Simen. So now, the Gemara now goes on to Agaditas. If you haven't been able to pay attention so far, this is where it gets good. Okay, I think that a good majority of the next Gemaras until we finish are going to be Agaditas. Zalf and Simon, the next are there are going to be four Rabbanim that are speaking here. So the Zalfin is for Rabbi Zeira. Shalmu Talmidav es Rabbi Zakai. The Talmidim asked Rabbi Zakai, "Bameha arechta yamim?" We've had this before in Tainis.
This is Rabbi Yochanan's father.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's not often that he's quoted. Anyway, why did you have Arichas Yamim? He says, Miyamai, in all my days, lo hishtanti mayim betoch Dalat Amos shel Tefila. That's why this Gemara is being brought up, because we just discussed Dalat Amos of Tefila and urinating. So he says, I've never urinated within four Amos of a Makom Tefila. Even though we learned before, it's mutter. It's mutter to be within Dalat Amos, so you can be mashtin. But he said, I never did it. I was machmir on myself. V'lo kinisi shem l'chaveri. I never gave my friend a nickname. V'lo bitalti kiddush hayom. And I never was mevatel kiddush hayom. Obviously, for us, it's no big deal. We use kedem grape juice. For them, it was very hard to find wine, and they were very poor. But he said, I never, ever, ever missed it. I never missed kiddush hayom. And what? Kiddush Rabba, assuming it's a Kiddush Rabba, yeah. Ima Zakina Haisali, I had a very old mother. Pamachas one time, Makra Kippa Shabarosha. She took the scarf on her head and she sold it, Ve'avia la Kiddush Hayom, in order to buy me wine so that I can make Kiddush. Tana, and it's learned, that Kisha Mesa, when she died, Hinicha lo Gimel Meos Garve Yayin. She left for him 300 jugs of wine, meaning that because of the mitzvah that he was Makayim, and she assisted him in being Makayim, she became wealthy enough to provide him with this wine. And not only that, Kishameis, who, when he died, Hiniach Libanov Shloshes Alafim Garvayayim. He, who was very machmid about it, he left his kids 3,000 jugs of wine. So, there's an Arichas Yamim Segula for those who do Kiddush Hayom, and it was Mekuyim in him. That's the first story. Rav Huna Hava Asur Risa. Rav Huna was strapping himself not with a belt, but with a like a reed almost. He took a reed from the swamp, and he cut what?
A rope or a reed,
yeah. Risa's a rope, yeah. He took a rope and he girded himself with the rope. The koi kame de Rav, and he stood in front of Rav. Amrle, Rav said to him, "My hai, why are you using a rope? Not a pirate." Amrle. So he said to him, "Lo havel kiddusha, I didn't have enough money for kiddush. Umashkanti lehem yone. So what I did was I collateraled my belt. Va'asa bi kiddusha, and I was able to, with that collateral money, collateral with that money that I collateraled my belt off, I was able to buy kiddush with it. Amrle. So Rav said to him, "Yehei Rav, it should be Hashem's will that titum b'sirai, that your flesh should be covered, meaning that you should have enough money that you should have, you should be well, well adorned." You should be, that you should be covered in, shirai is like a type of garment, it's like a silk. You should be covered in silk, meaning you should be wealthy enough that you should be covered in silk. Ki ichlal, Rabba Bray, when Rabba, Rav Huna's son, was getting married, Rav Huna inish gitzahava, Rav Huna was a very short man, and Gana Apuraya, he was lying on the couch, and Asyan Binte, the Kalse, his daughters-in-law and his daughters, Shalchan Veshadyan Minaihu Ale Ad Itum Beshiroi. He was such a short man, and he was sitting on such a large couch, that nobody even recognized that he was lying on the couch, he was so short. How short could he be that you're not recognizing a guy lying on a couch? I do not know. But he was quite short, obviously, and so they had no idea he was even there. And so, when they were undressing, they took off their jacket that was made of silk, and they threw it on the couch, and unbeknownst to them, they threw it on Rav Huna, who was now being cloaked in fine silk. So there was Mekuyim with him. Shama Rav heard this story, and that his bracha came true. The ikbid, he got very upset at Rav Huna. Why did he get upset at Rav Huna? Amar, because he said to him, "My time alo amartli ki birachteich v'chein lamar." When I gave you the bracha that you should be cloaked in shirai, in silk, you should have said v'chein lamar. The bracha is to you too, because Rav now saw that Rav Huna is that the bracha is mekuyam, so Rav gets all upset. You should have said v'chein lamar. It's an interesting story. Anyway, I don't know why all of a sudden. Why did Rav get upset only after he heard that Rav Huna was actually cloaked in silk? Why wouldn't he get upset right away when he gave the bracha to Rav Huna, which might have been years earlier, even if it was just hours earlier? Why didn't he get upset at that time and say, "You should be saying v'chein lamar to me"? I don't really know the answer to that. But anyway. Next case, Shalu Talmida v'Rabbi Eliezer ben Shamua b'Ma'arech Zayamim. How did you become such a old guy? Amar lahem, he said to them, Yamai lo asisi kapandariya lebeis haKnesses. I never made a shortcut out of shul. Okay, which we will get to next time, I think. I also never stepped on anybody who was sitting on the floor learning. And we'll get to that also. The way they used to do it is that people used to actually say, they weren't chairs, people used to sit on floors to the drasha. And so when somebody would come to sit up front, or if somebody was on the panel, let's say, or somebody was giving shiur, he would sometimes have to leapfrog over people and step over people. He said, "I never stepped over people. I would always cut to the side, but I would never step over people."
I think the old style Sephardi shuls where they kind of all sit around the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of see it as like that, where it's not the same kind of formal litvish seating. But
very good. Okay, choliot. Very good. V'lo nasasi kapi below bracha. I also never duchened without a bracha. Okay, the Gemara will discuss this because it seems like you're always supposed to be duchen with a bracha. What's the big deal? So that's that. Let's stop here. Very last line. Stop there. I got two missed calls from the 03 number. Did you get two? Somebody's really...
No. Maybe we should call.